Hello and welcome to The Two Tones. It's episode 15 of what's been a roller coaster year for the Carlton Football Club. Tony Moclair and Tony DiBolfo. Tone, for the second week in a row, we discuss a Carlton victory. We talked earlier and the thesaurus has nearly been exhausted of superlatives.
We're trying to keep it to one superlative at a time here at the moment, Tony, aren't we? It's a magnificent problem to have, but isn't it magnificent to see the boys performing the way they are under John Barker at the moment? It's so very, very heartening. And I dips my lid to the Carlton supporters and members who turned out in their droves.
30,000.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know, we're playing an interstate team, you know, so I thought that was a fantastic show of faith from the Carlton people, who would have been heartened by what they saw. It wasn't, you would say, out of the classic training manual in terms of the disposals or the field kicking or whatever, but in terms of the will to better themselves and to improve, I don't think the supporters could have asked more from the players that took to the field for Carlton at the weekend.
No, it's exactly what supporters who had exiled themselves from games, I think, needed to see. Number one, there was a win. You take the kids to a win. That's really important, if you've got kids, that is. But with what you also saw, like you said there, Tone, was spirit, commitment, persistence of effort, all the sorts of things, and a different style of play than the club than we saw under Malthouse. It's a kind of, it's more exciting to watch under John Barker, and the team seem to be playing for each other a lot more.
They are indeed, and certainly playing for the coach, and all credit to John for affording the players license to take the game on and really strut their stuff. And as you said, Tony, it's magnificent to see the players really emerging from their shells and being proactive and taking the game on. You know, we were just talking about Tom Bell before he came on air about how, in, you know, moments of the game, he actually willed himself, to say, I'm the man here, to really launch Carlton forward. And that's what we're seeing across the board, players that are sort of emerging and understanding that, you know, to be at this club, I have to make an impression and make an imprint for the betterment of the team. And I think what we're seeing is a total change of mindset and ethos. And that's credit to the coach for allowing the players, their freedom to basically take the contest on. And it's extremely liberating. And as you said, it's great to watch.
It really is. It makes going to the footy fun again. If you're playing the Two Tones drinking game at home, specifically the when will they mention Patrick Cripps, that would be now. What was interesting in the whole kind of ongoing story of Cripper is the attention he got from the Gold Coast Suns. He missed a set shot at goal, and the team rule for Gold Coast was obviously three blokes to get in his face. Three. They virtually took a number and they all went up and they gave him an earful and they let him know something about his kicking.
Well, all I'll say there, Tony, is that Mark Murphy must be licking his lips,
yeah,
you know, because Patrick Cripps is welcoming the attention. He's welcoming the heat. Bring it on. He seems to be thriving and responding to it. And can you imagine how the dynamics will be when Bryce Gibbs returns from suspension? You know, we're going to have strength in numbers, you know, in the heat of battle across the midfield. And all power to Patrick Cripps. I mean, we're seeing his emergence as a player really by the minute. You know, with every minute of every game, you're just seeing this player emerging. And I think what's impressive about him too is the way that he just goes about it with no fuss or fanfare. You know, he doesn't seem to be under any duress. He seems to be relishing the contest and the attention that he's getting from, as you said, more than one opponent.
Yeah.
And he just seems to be thriving on all of that. And all power to him. And again, he is another reason why it's good to be able to go along to see Carlton play these days, because it's fantastic. And Cripps is part of the future.
Well, he is. We talked a couple of weeks ago go about green shoots, green shoots, green shoots, and there are many more. We saw Holman's first game.
Oh, Nick Holman.
Before we get to him, Dylan Buckley, we talk about continuing revelations. He's just fantastic to watch.
Well, he is. And, he is. And I, you know, I think.
Smart footballer.
Yeah. And I think what we're also seeing, you know, we saw that magnificent running goal, you know, that rebounding goal off half back when he took the you know, he took the players on and drove that kick.
That was an incredible great goal.
Well, I think what we're seeing is, you know, that was a part of his game that perhaps wasn't sort of working earlier on in the piece. You know, his evasive skills were there, but, you know, what he did after that play was something of an issue. And yet he's working through that. And what we're now seeing is him becoming a potent rebounding halfback flanker. And I think that's... As you say, that's exciting too. And he plays with the pluck of his old man. And I think, you know, Carlton supporters really warm to that. And good on him. You know, it's great to see. And I'm sure Jimmy, you know, would be a proud father watching on from the stands.
We're going to get to the whole father-son connection in a minute because there's been a very important development here at the club about that. But what did you make of Holman's second game?
Second game for the Carlton Football Club. Came on, ditched the vest and got his run, you know, in the second half of the game. Made an immediate impression, didn't he, Tony? It was magnificent to see those two left foot field kicks lace out, actually hit the target. Yeah. And I've been a critic of a lot of the players for their field kicking, their inability to hit a target from, you know, 15, 20 metres away, which to my way of thinking is really unacceptable for players at this level. Yet he's come in, could have easily blazed away, had a shot at goal, but he put the first one down Tom Bell's throat and he followed up with that terrific field kick to Lockie Henderson. And the Honourable Martin Pakula, big Carlton man, tweeted quite rightly, shades of the Doggy Brown in Nick Holman, the number 20 and the shaggy hair. It's lovely to see another player who probably is playing for his football life. You know, he has to make an impression now in the second half of the year to really show the club that he has the wherewithal to become a senior player at Carlton. And I tell you what, he wouldn't have done his cause any harm the way he came on and delivered as he did against Gold Coast at the weekend.
We talked about Murph before and there is that pressure off him. Do you think that also affects how he captains the team?
Well, look, I think so. I think what's magnificent, you know, we mentioned Cripps earlier, is that probably Murph has an opportunity now. He has a little bit more freedom to actually concentrate on the game. And I suspect by being captain, you obviously have other areas of responsibility that you have to monitor. You know, he would obviously have to be mindful of the players around him, how they're faring, and of course he himself has to lead. But I think Murph must be feeling pretty good about things at the moment, the way the players around him are really taking up the baton. And I think the other thing with Murphy too is that he's actually playing with a lot more freedom. He's had to battle injuries for a fair period now, but he looks to be moving freely, and I think right now he's probably in a very good space. And I'm really happy for Mark Murphy because, gee whiz, it wasn't so long ago that you know, he and everyone else here were under absolute siege, you know, and it can't have been fun to be at the place at that time of the year, but now it seems to be a great place to be, and you can certainly see it in the way Mark plays.
Yeah, exactly, I mean, just how sublime his skills are, and you know, the kind of penny dropped for me. I think it was a Port Adelaide game where I saw him do something absolutely magnificent, and then I thought, well, the raps were justified. You are that player.
Yes. I think what's great, Tone, is that, you know, Mark Murphy, to me, perhaps his greatest strength is his bravery. I look at him as a brave player, that, you know, he's not a big man in terms of physical stature, and yet, you know, he's copped an enormous amount of treatment in his time at Carlton, and he just seems to plough on. He doesn't, you know, there are no histrionics, and he accepts his lot as it is. He's a popular fellow at Carlton. Players love him, and I think it's great for him that that the team collectively now is really starting to respond. It's got to make it easier on his lot as captain to be able to do what he does best. And so, you know, when you look at it, you know, the way Murphy's going now and where he is at the moment, it's another tick, and there are many boxes being ticked You know, with each week as it passes.
Well, just on that, there was obviously... there was some speculation about Lockie being courted by Geelong, and that was, I'm pretty sure, addressed by the club during the week. I'm fervently hoping that Lockie just plays out his days here because he has been absolutely magnificent in the last month.
Well, there's another tick, I guess, Tone. Yeah. Another example, exactly, you know, what we're talking about, that Lockie really has responded, you know, in the best possible way, as we all hoped he would. I think he went on record to say that he really just wanted to concentrate on getting his game right. Well, he's certainly doing that. And I think, you know, when we talked about Holman and, you know, those young players coming through, I think what their presence actually does is actually it helps drive the older players. Mm. Maybe it gives them a new lease of life too. And it's an infectious thing. You know, and we're seeing Murphy enjoying his football. We're seeing Lockie Henderson enjoying his football. And that's important. You know, you've got to have fun. You know, you've got to enjoy. When you come to work, you've got to enjoy what you're doing. And I just think it's really noticeable. And it is heartening to see the way Lockie is going about his business, and let's hope that, you know, by season's end he does decide, well, this is home and I'm here for the long haul.
Fingers crossed there for sure. Now, we mentioned the father-son announcement by the club this week. Can you throw a bit more light on that for us, Tone?
The Peter Dean Academy was so named after the great dual premiership Carlton defender Peter Dean, and the name... What a player he was. Turned up with his son Harry for the announcement this week, Tone. And funny thing, I hadn't seen Peter Dean for a while. In fact, the last time I saw him was when Norton's was closing down. And he rang me
and he said,
do you want to go down there for a beer for old time's sake? And of course, you know, I can remember being there in the main bar in 95. You know, it only seems like yesterday. And so Peter is a great traditionalist, you know, and a great clubman. He always used to be in the Higgins Bar here at the Social Club after great Carlton victories, you know, and I think I've said before this story that I always asked him, why do you come down and mix with the members? And he said, well, they've paid their money to see the players play, and it's only fair that we reciprocate and support them. That was the sort of guy he was. But he turned up this week, and I thought I was shaking hands with a Mason. He put out his left hand to shake hands, and I said, what's the problem? And he's actually got a broken thumb, the legacy of playing footy at 50 up at the Mid-Murray League. Wasn't in plaster. He believes it'll knit pretty well.
Has he still got the plaster cast on his arm?
No, that's been consigned to the vault, I think. Right. But look, he was a proud man to be so honoured in this way. His name will be linked with the Father-Son Academy for the next 5 years. And 5 years from now, another grade of the game will be so honoured. So to see Peter Dean here with his boy Harry, we saw Mill Hanna's boy Max here. The three Silvanis, of course, been well documented, were here with father and grandfather. It was great to see Serge. And, you know, really, football royalty was on show. Craig Bradley was here with his boy Jake. Jeff Southby was at the conference. The great John Nichols was here also. And
Dean Rice
as well, so with Bailey. So, look, it's exciting times, you know. And again, what we're seeing is the tradition continue with the names, the famous names of the club. And I think it's a measure of where the club is going that we're starting to see these great men of Carlton come back. And there was a period where a lot of these men were lost to the club, you know, when they played their final games. And I think it's really terrific that, you know, that the board and maybe Stephen Trigg also understand and appreciate the worth of these men to the fabric of the Carlton Football Club and what the actual name means and the number on the back of the Guernsey. And, look, there seems to be a lot of pressure on the young kids to come through. You know, there's no guarantees that all these players are going to play for Carlton. But it is absolutely fabulous to see, you know, blokes running around, these kids that are maybe 10, 12, 14, 15 years of age with names like Silvani, Hannah, Rice on their backs, Dean, you know, Bradley. And that's the future of the club. And what a great initiative.
It's well done to the club for that. With Bradleson, you're inheriting just a mind-boggling amount of sporting ability there, because Braddles could have played cricket for Australia, presumably. He'd have gone all the way. He certainly played at a state level.
Very
right?
true. He did.
Yeah.
He did.
So, I mean, did Braddles' son, has he flirted with other codes or other sports as far as
I don't know that he has. I think he's been playing Northern Knights, memory serves, and so pretty much concentrating on his football. And I think in this day and age, it is one or the other.
Yeah.
These days, Braddles in those days could probably get away with it a little bit more. And before him, Peter Bedford too, you know, won a Brownlow medal, but preferred to play cricket and was an injury away from a baggy green.
Oh,
So in those days, it was probably a little bit easier to combine, you know, the various sporting codes. But I think Jake's very much committed to the to Australian rules, and let's see where the journey takes him. It'd be lovely to see another Bradley strutting his stuff here at the Carlton Football Club.
Now, those boys that we're talking about, I think they can join the program at 10, at the
Correct.
Age of 10. Now, when they actually come to that fork in the road where they decide, can they either go, is it rookie or free agency, or join the club? How does it actually work? Does the club have dibs on them necessarily if their old man has played 100 games?
Correct. The club would have first dibs to take the player under the father-son rule, as you say, providing the father has played 100 games plus for Carlton. And I'm pretty sure they could take a player as a rookie or you know, list him on the senior amongst the senior playing list. You've got, a quirk with Bailey Rice in that by virtue of Dean playing 100 games for St Kilda also, he has a choice to nominate St Kilda as his, you know, club of choice, or conversely just nominate for the draft generally and trust his luck with any club. So we were saying off air earlier that Bailey all that Bailey is known is Dean Rice's career at Carlton, and of course Dean Rice was a premiership player here at Carlton, so maybe that will sway his thinking, but time will tell there. But it was great. Just another matter of the father-son academy, Ryan Houlihan has been appointed coach of that squad.
Yep.
And I think it's really terrific. Ryan's not long been out of the game, and I think it's important that the young fellows coming through have a most recent past player with whom they can identify. And I think Ryan's going to be on call for any needs that the young players have. And he's just the conduit between the young players and the club. And it's fantastic, again, that the club has seen fit to get one of its former players involved. And that's the essence of Carlton. And I think it's just another sign of where the club is going. And I think we talked earlier, Tony, about the fortunes of the team and how members and supporters turned out, I think because they can now see a direction. Well, I think there's a direction off the field happening also. And it's, as the historian of the club, it's just magnificent to see that Carlton's history is so acknowledged in this way. And all power to the decision makers for their courage of conviction in doing this.
Can I coin a word? Is that particular move like getting Hot Lips or Hula as that player's representative? Would it be called a Trignitiative? Is it? Do you think it's an initiative of Stephen Trigg?
Oh, well, look. I'll say this about Steve Trigg, that he has got a magnificent sense of history for the game. And I've often said to, you know, I'm just so very, very heartened, because I've often said to people, yes, you have to move forward, and yes, you have to look to the future and where this club is going. But to understand where Carlton is going and where it is, you have to appreciate where it's been and the story of Carlton. And if we don't celebrate our history here, well, then we're GWS. We're a 5-minute fly-by-nighter.
Exactly. You know, you turn your back on 150 years of equity.
Yes,
so to speak. It's a term that's overused, but yes, it's equity, it's capital that you draw on or ignore at your peril.
And Stephen Trigg understands that, and I might say this week that lost in everything about the Father-Son Academy, there was a heritage committee that convened for the first time, and people on that heritage committee include people like Cole Kinnear and Judy Mullen, who is Vivian Kerr's daughter, does a lot of work for the women of Carlton. We've had Jamie Sanderson involved from the Bluesium. Shane O'Sullivan was at that meeting. Curly Austin came back. So these are the people that are, I guess, charged with looking at how we first of all preserve but also celebrate and showcase the history of the club. And again, it's a measure of where Carlton's heading, that these great initiatives are happening again around the place.
We're going to preview the game against Footscray, a.k.a. the Western Bulldogs, and we're going to link the two themes that we've just explored there, Tone, with history and future. Let's start by previewing the highest score that Carlton has ever kicked against. I'm just going to call them Footscray for the purposes of our previewing of the game. Can you talk us through that?
Look, Luca Ganano prepared the paperwork this morning, as he always does, and I was amazed to read the highest score kicked by a Carlton team against the then Footscray team, 30-21, 201 at Princes Park, round 18, 1982. So we were closing in on the back-to-back premiership double at that stage. And, I mean, you know, the Carlton team at that point was at its absolute zenith. And you know, I said to Luca, if you've got half an hour, could you tell me who the goal kickers were?
Pull up a chair is my advice as Tony reads these out.
I will you know, if the listeners could give me 10 minutes grace here, I'll try and get through the goal kickers. But we had Ross the Farmer Ditchburn, the boy from Cookran, bagged a lazy six. And then you had Ken Sheldon. He's got a bit on his plate at the moment with the coaching rounds. Ken Sheldon, the Dominator, and Alex Marcoux, four each. Then you had Wayne Harms popping in for three in a best-on-ground performance.
Not the first and not the last.
That's right. Then you had China Malin, Robert Clippity-Clomp, and Mark Buckley on debut, kicking two goals. And then you had the Buzz and Spiro Korkomielis troubling the scores for one goal each, as was Val Perovic, a single goal kicker for the club, and reliable informer that was Val's one and only goal for the Carlton Football Club in that game. But they opened up, Tone, with 10 goals, 9 to a goal in the first quarter.
And, wow.
As Mike Williamson would say, good night, Irene. It was all over by the first change.
How do you rate, I mean, Buzz's performance that day, one goal?
Well, look.
We're all entitled to our quiet days, but.
Maybe there was a night on the Great Northern the night before and he was a bit dusty. But look, you know, he's jagged one. It's just outrageous.
It was probably spectacular, though.
It would have been spectacular, no doubt. But there you go. And can you imagine, you know, the Heatley stand in 1982, round 18. It would have been absolutely pumping, you know. And I don't know whether Peter Dean would have been there then. It was a bit before his time. But what a team it was that took to the field right through that period of the early 80s, the Mosquito Fleet, as it became famously known.
That was then. This is now, Tone. We play the Western Bulldogs at Etihad Stadium Saturday night.
Yes.
Who's in, who's out? Can we speculate with any kind of authority as to...
Well,
Menzel, is he looking proppy after the Suns game?
Yes, look, he, you know, got a bit of a knock on the knee, you know, information is, and maybe touch and go. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe a couple of enforced changes. It's worth noting, Tony, that Blaine Johnson was elevated to the senior list this week.
Congratulations,
on the end of a six-goal haul in the VFL last week. So Blaine may well come into contention for selection if there are to be enforced changes to the team. I'd imagine that John Barker will try and keep the team fairly settled. But again, if Blaine Johnson gets a call up, well, isn't this what you want to see?
Yeah.
We talked about Holman earlier, and we're seeing the emergence of Nick Graham, and you know,
which
has
been magnificent,
absolutely magnificent. And I think that this really is the attraction for Carlton members and supporters going to the game. You know, if Blaine Johnson does get the call up, I'd love to see him strut his stuff. The other player that must be knocking on the door is
Bockhurst.
Yeah, Bockhurst has been in good form in the twos. And again, there's another player
So is Liam Jones.
Well, that's true. And what a great problem for John Barker and the selectors that they've actually got players knocking on the door, you know. And it's just so very, very heartening to see so many players putting their hand up to play. I want to be part of this. I want to be part of this team, and I want to eke out a career here at the Carlton Football Club. And I think while John and the match committee continue to turn over these young players, there's real cause for Carlton supporters to get along, because this again is where Carlton's heading, and we all want to see where the where these players are going with their careers and who will be there and who are the Carlton players of tomorrow.
How do you rate this game, Tone, in the context of, let's say, the last five games? If we, it sounds uncharitable to say, but we may have got Port Adelaide on a bad day for them, but we were switched on. The Suns, we were a better team than them. Is this going to be maybe the truest test so far of where the team is under John Barker?
I think that's a fair call, Tony. No doubt about that, because the Western Bulldogs, they're... They're in the upper echelons now, aren't they? And really trying to solidify their place going into September. So they have much to play for and have deserved to be where they're at. You don't fluke being eighth or wherever they are on the ladder without playing well. So in the Western Bulldogs, I think this will be the greatest test for John Barker and the players since they've come together in this specific relationship. But I think it's also a challenge for the players. It's a challenge for them to challenge themselves, if that makes sense, because I think, we've had two good wins now. Let's make no bones about it. But it could possibly be easy to be comfortable with those. And there's no place for complacency here. This team has got to continue to improve. And I think the challenge for all the Carlton players is to continue to raise the bar. The challenge no doubt will be presented by the Western Bulldogs. They're a good team and they're moving forward. But each Carlton player that takes the field has a challenge from within, to challenge themselves to be their best and to make sure that the team continues to head the right way. There are immense challenges facing this team on a lot of levels come Saturday night.
It's going to be a fascinating game from that point of view. And you see you just wonder what pressure they will apply, intense pressure to Carlton, you would think, to make us fumble, to turn over the ball, drop our heads. So that, to me, that's going to be the most intriguing part of the battle, how we withstand that pressure and then respond to it. And
well, especially that's very
true. The younger kids too.
Very true.
It's going to be a cauldron out there.
It will be indeed, Tony, and you'll be stirring the pot.
doing what I can. Now, let's have a look at players who have played for both clubs, because this is a very interesting list.
Well, it is. There's a cast of thousands. I don't know if time allows us to get through them all.
Pick the eyes out of it. How about I throw a few at you? You can't have a list like this without, of course, having Simon Minton-Connell on it, because there's normally like a 1 in 4 chance he's played for any club that we're playing. Now, we've covered him on the podcast before, so let's just note him. Yes, he did play for Footscray between 89 and 91. Adrian Gallagher.
Well, Adrian Gallagher, three-time premiership player at the Carlton Football Club, played his best football here, obviously, wore the number 10. With distinction, left foot rover. Very disappointed that he wasn't here this week, Tone, for the Peter Dean Academy, because we had two-thirds of the greatest line in following history. Nichols and Silvani were here.
Yeah.
We needed gags together. And I don't know that I've ever seen Nichols, Silvani, Gallagher in the one frame, in a photograph. So that's something that we need to orchestrate when we get the chance. But Gags, a great player for the Carlton Football Club. Had a stint briefly at Footscray, then was at North Melbourne also. Ian Robertson. Now, Ian Robertson, another triple premiership player for the Carlton Football Club, later, remembered as a Seven Network football commentator. Robbo is sort of one that I think would be close to being inducted into Carlton's Hall of Fame. He hasn't been yet, but was a fantastic wingman for the Carlton Football Club through that glory era. Had a kick on him like a bull, Tony. He could really thump the ball, and I can remember as a kid seeing Ian Robinson drop kick goals from the wing here at Princess Park. You know, there's drop kicks. You know, if you look at some of the old grand finals too, you'll see him thumping the ball to the goal square from the centre with drop kicks, and he was a fantastic torpedo punt kick too. He was a fantastic footballer, the number 34. There's some other names that are a little bit more obscure. Gordon Casey was here in the premiership year of 68, but later was a pretty good player for the Footscray Football Club. Max O'Halloran, I can't tell you a lot about him, was at the club in 74. Need to do my homework there on Max. I don't know a lot. Greg Towns, a hard nut, red-headed player, played 6 good years for the Carlton Football Club as a midfielder. Dennis Collins, a late Dennis Collins. People remember that little incident with Robert Muir down at Moorabbin when Robert Muir turned around and basically, well, looked like he decked Dennis Collins anyway. But
you'd stay decked, wouldn't you?
Yeah, deck was probably the term you would use there. He was a speedster, played as a winger, and unfortunately died a year or two ago, well before his time. Robert Klomp, we talked about earlier. Now, there was a man that was right place, right time, played 2 premierships for the Carlton Football Club. Phil Malin, another dual premiership player, were part of the back-to-back years of 81-82. Mark Williams, I think, is currently with the Richmond coaching staff, if memory serves. Bruce Reid played most of his games at Footscray, ended up here as a set half back, and the father of the 2 Reid boys going around there for the Swans and Collingwood.
There you go.
Minton Connell, the loaf you've mentioned earlier.
Mark Athorne
was here. He was part of the 93 grand final team,
well,
unfortunately.
That's unfair.
Now, Matty Hogg.
Yes, he had a bad day that day. Matty Hogg, oh my God, what a player.
Well, Matty Hogg, we'll see him no doubt later in the year when the 95 Premiership team is celebrated. Now, there was a guy that gave his all for Carlton.
Didn't he?
Didn't he take advantage of the switching of clubs, you know, and what a hard nut Hoggy was, you know. And in actual fact, he wasn't here the other day, but I'm pretty sure Hoggy's got a couple of boys running around also.
That's
so
good news.
If they've got half as much grunt as Oink Oink Hoghead will be right, I think.
James Cook, I remember.
Yes, the captain.
Yeah.
The captain, he came over with much fanfare from Tasmania. Didn't really click here. Played some good games at the Bulldogs, actually, and was actually here in the premiership year of 95, but wasn't able to break through. Ben Harrison ended up at Richmond. Still gives me nightmares of sorts. He was the man that kicked that winning goal in for Richmond here in what was Stephen Kernahan's last game. Yeah. And that really hurt a Carlton footballer sinking us on that particular day. And poor old Sticks hobbled off. He wasn't even carried off. No one was to know that was it. But not a great moment in Carlton history, I'd have to say. Ben Sexton, brother of Michael, had a run here. Alan Thorpe, Indigenous player who never played senior footy at Carlton. I think he made a bit of an impression in our night competition that particular year, 95. Jimmy Plunkett famously appeared on the Era Guard ad.
Yes, he did.
Have a good
too,
weekend,
yeah.
Mr. Walker, I think, from memory.
Did he seriously play Carlton 10 years ago?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yes,
my
he
God.
Did. Good parade old boy, Jim Plunkett.
Yeah,
Mark Austin. I think he's still at the kennel, is he not? I'm not sure if he's finished there or. Well, he may have finished, may well have finished. He's a good mate of Jordan Russell's, as memory serves. Mm. Andreas Everett. Well, now there's a player that's really made an impression the second half of the season.
Hasn't he? With that unique goal celebration, the fingertips?
Yes. The germaphobe, as he called it. And he's moving beautifully at the moment, Andreas. And he's a dangerous footballer.
He's been a complete revelation
there, hasn't he?
It's exciting. The delivery is so much better to him, obviously. But he can kick, like his kicking from the boundary line is magnificent.
Yes.
He's a really reliable shot at goal.
Yes, and let's not forget it was Michael Malthouse that got Andreas Everett here too. Went to went north to Port Douglas, I think, to get him down to the club. So,
well, thank you, Mick.
Thank you, Mick. Liam Jones, as you said earlier, Tony, off the back of 6 goals the VFL, maybe knocking on the door again, who knows. And Jason Tutt, another former Bulldogs player, the King. Again, we're hoping that we get to see a little bit more of him shortly. A busy player that's got a nice turn of speed and has the capacity to kick goals.
Well, there you go, Tone. Just one talking point before we go. Carrots, I don't think gets the raps he deserves, well, generally speaking, but he's been in some great form lately, you know, real kind of on-field general as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. I see he's marked down with a toe concern. He'll be undergoing a test this week. But, again, he's a player that's in the twilight of his career. And you would say if Andrew Corazzo has wrung the cloth dry, you know, yeah. He's given Carlton everything that he possibly could as a player. You know, when it's all said and done, that's all you ask, that a player gives his absolute all for a club that he truly loves. You know, and you know, you think of Andrew Corazzo and you think Carlton, because he's a man that for whom Carlton, the football club, and the district of Carlton is part of the DNA. And when you look at Andrew Corazzo's career, you salute him because, as I said a moment ago, I doubt that he could have possibly given this football club more than he's actually given it.
Spot on. Well said. Now, so get along, keep going to the games, I think, is the message we have every week on the Two Tones, because win, lose or draw, you're going to see, you know, the start of a brilliant playing career. Unfortunately, you may even see the end of a brilliant playing career if you, as we saw with Juddy the other day. But there's always a reason to go to the games.
Very true, and I think Carlton people have more reasons to go now, because what we're seeing on many levels is the emergence of a new group, a new, you know, crux of Carlton, and that is an exciting thing to see. And all power to John Barker and the players for the way they're going about it. And as I said, you know, after the Port game, I think you go along now with a renewed sense of pride in the players, the way they perform, and a reinvigorated pride in the jumper.
That, it 100% true. It's not the the odious duty that it was, you know, a mere couple of months ago.
Very true, Tony.
So
very
it's
true.
Great times to be a Carlton supporter. Thanks again, Tony. Tony DeBolfo, Tony Mowclair here signing out. Thank you to Luca Ganano. We will catch you next week on the Two Tones.